Welcome, Derek O'Keefe. Thanks for joining us on the Canby Report Council interview series. First up, why don't you tell people who don't know you who you are and what sort of got you into politics?
Yeah, well, I'm Derek O'Keefe. I'm a renter, so people know me from my activism around the Vancouver Tenants Union. But we only started that a year and a half ago. We were like a decade too late starting the Vancouver Tenants Union. But before that, I've been an anti-war activist, an independent journalist, sort of a media democracy agitator. Been an editor with something called Ricochet Media, and a number of other independent media projects. I've even started podcasts and used to host the co-op radio, morning show for many years. So I'm a longtime activist, and I've worked on a lot of election campaigns behind the scenes, helping with communications and other elements of outreach. But this year I found myself a candidate, and I'm enjoying it because I have the chance to run alongside Gene Swanson. It's not a normal politician.
So Cope's had not a great electoral success in the last few years. Do you think with Gene's campaign that there's an attempt to turn that bad luck around?
Yeah, well, Cope needed a paint job, so we did change colors. But also, I think Cope needed a sort of new infusion of activists, and we've gotten that through the Gene Swanson campaign and just renters becoming more collectively organized in the city. But also, the city needs Cope again. So we haven't been elected to city council in 10 years, basically, since the 2008 election was the last time we elected someone to council, I believe. In 2014, Cope was shut out entirely. But we did start to plant some important seeds that things did not have to be this way and that the market was really failing to deliver the housing we need. So in 2014, Cope campaigned on an empty homes tax, for example, and that was sort of like, oh, it's way out there. That's not a workable solution. But now that's just like common sense that we need the empty homes tax. So we think we have played a role already, even before getting back into elected positions, of shifting that debate back to where it needs to go. And the last decade, we've just gone so far in the wrong direction that I think it's a good year for Cope's resurgence. And we definitely are hoping and hopeful that that we are going to get some people elected this year, and not just at city council, but we're also running excellent candidates at school board and park board, and we think we have a real shot of getting people on all three boards.
But even if Cope tops the ballot on each of those races, you won't have a majority, so you'll have to work with other parties. How do you see, if you do get elected, Cope working with Vision, NPA, Yes, all these other parties that maybe have drastically different positions than you?
Yeah, well, we're going to have progressive partners on that council. I'm optimistic that, first of all, the right is running too many candidates. But second of all, they're not really offering any solutions or any coherent critique to what has gone wrong in this city. The more complicated question is like Vision and to some extent, Yes, they're kind of fighting over the center. I really believe those parties have Vision has presided over such a difficult decade and seeing so many people priced out of the city or pushed to the brink that their electoral brand is not strong. So I don't expect that Vision will elect more than one, or maybe they will be shut out entirely. But my job's not a pundit. I'm an advocate here. What I'm saying is I think we have a lot in common with some of the other progressive parties, and clearly we've, for example, one city has advocated for progressive property taxes, and we call it a mansion tax, and we want the money to go to the city. So there are little differences in policies there. But this is a new thing to have at least a couple of the progressive parties strongly advocating for progressive property taxes. And I think this is one of those ideas like the empty homes tax that will become common sense and will become policy. So there's an example of where we'll work together on that issue on council together. And the Greens as well. You know, the Greens were at the rally that we attended a couple days ago for the Berkeley Tower tenants who are facing mass rent eviction in the West End. So absolutely, we could work with Adrian Carr or Abit Fry if he should get elected to change the city's tenant protection guidelines.
One of the things Cope is talking about and Gene has been talking about since the by-election is this idea of a rent freeze. Now, the refrain from economists and others is that a rent freeze over the long term can hurt renters by discouraging the bringing on of new rental supply. So how does Cope kind of balance that broader concern with the campaign it's trying to push?
Yeah. Well, you know, economists are not unanimous on this. And there is a new, you know, emerging left-wing economics is coming back after this neoliberal era we've lived through. But yeah, there's always this pushback in terms of restoring the balance. I mean, we view the rent freeze itself as a temporary measure that will kind of make up for a number of years where the balance of power was just too much in favor of landlords and property owners. So the BC Liberal formula that has just been changed by the BC government, that was put in 14 years ago. And because of those max increases over 14 years, rents, partly because of those max increases, there are other factors, rents have soared in the city. So when we say to renters, look, the idea of a rent freeze is to give you a break for a couple years, for 4 years, and then we would reassess. It's not meant as a permanent policy. And, you know, the most common pushback we get is not the sort of right-wing economist points against rent control, but the main pushback we get is, why would you freeze the rents? We need them to decrease. You need to find a way to roll back the rent. But yeah, so it's a first step. And the other thing that rent control does is that if a city has stricter rent controls, it does help, along with other demand-side measures, to sort of cool the property market in general in the city. And we actually need to get land prices down over the long term. I mean, that we also need to capture the obscene amount of money at the higher ends of this market while we bring it down. And you have seen that already. Some of the demand-side measures that the provincial government have put through have worked. Now, the market is just so far out of control that we still have a long way to go. But we think rent control is an important component. And if the private market cannot, you know, they see other investments as more profitable than building purpose-built rental, then the city and other levels of government have to get into the business of building massive amounts of rental housing, of co-op housing, and social housing. And that's just crucial. This problem is not going to be solved by the market alone. It's not going to be solved by the market primarily. Yeah.
So housing's not the only issue on people's minds. What else is COPE talking about in this election season?
Yeah, even when you try to talk about other things, it comes back to housing. So we have transit policies, and, you know, everybody likes to debate where the Broadway subway should end up, or if it was too expensive, or where transit money should be spent for the region. And these are all decisions involving higher levels of government. But even major transit investments can't be delinked from the housing question, because, you know, we want to make sure that the Broadway corridor, the Broadway subway, first of all, that the land value that does happen around because of that gets captured for the public interest. And also, we don't want to see a new wave of displacement of existing rental housing and seeing condos go up in their place. So with something like the Broadway extension, it's really important to look at what that does to all the residential along there and what kind of new building gets done. So we would like to really use the new rental-only zoning tools that the province has finally given to the city. And in terms of transit itself, we have to look at access, because people's budgets are so squeezed that $95 monthly pass, I think, that is beyond what some working people can pay, and it hurts them. So we want to have subsidized passes. We're calling it a universal pass for the working class. We're going to have an announcement about this next week, so I don't want to get too much into it. But essentially a U-Pass for working people in Vancouver. And also we want to extend free transit. Right now I think it only goes up to 5 years old. We want to have free transit for youth, because it makes transit riders, and it's also just an accessibility thing for working class families to get around.
Two final non-political questions to close off, just more to get a flavor of who you are. First, you may have seen Justin McElroy's bracket competition for the unofficial ambassador of Vancouver. He did in late August, I believe.
Right, the Crow one.
The Crow one, yeah. Who would you, though, have picked as your unofficial ambassador for the city and these lands?
Can I say Gene Swanson, or is that too cheesy?
I mean, people have chosen cheesier, I'm sure.
I mean, I think our real ambassador should be the First Nations and the Indigenous peoples. And maybe that's a I don't know if that's a cliche now for a person on the left to say it's a good cliche. I think we should not only honor the place names of the Squamish and Tsleil-Waututh and Musqueam peoples, but we should honor some of their heroes and their legends. So he's not with us anymore, but Chief Dan George, for example, was a Tsleil-Waututh leader, famous because he was in a movie with Dustin Hoffman back in the day and nominated for an Oscar. But he was a powerful and prophetic leader of the people here who have now led the movement against the Kinder Morgan pipeline. So if I had to name an unofficial ambassador, I would maybe leave it to the Tsleil-Waututh and Squamish and Musqueam to choose if you had to make it one person. But I would just say we should really empower the First Nations here and devolve power to them wherever we can. It's not just about recognizing that the land is stolen and recognizing that this was their territory and is their territory, but about empowering them. So let them choose the ambassador.
All right. Finally, Vancouver's changed a lot over the years, especially since Expo 86 and the Olympics. What is one venue, thing, something about the city that we've lost that you wish we could just have back?
Oh my God. It's just like, yeah, you walk around, it's like a ghost town, right? I've lived in, like, I know we're on Commercial Drive today to do this interview, but I feel like I've lived in every neighborhood except Commercial Drive. So everywhere I go, there's that famous little cafe or shop that's now gone. But I'll go a little more back to the 90s, and I was a big sports, I'm still a big sports fan and a big basketball fanatic. So I would say the Vancouver Grizzlies. And yeah, that's not going to get the like millennial demographic.
You and Fred Harding.
I'm outing myself as an Xennial / Gen Xer. But we missed the Grizzlies, and it was just a tragedy to be teased with that franchise for a few years of misery and then have them move away. So I would bring back the Vancouver Grizzlies. They're basketball populism for you.
All right. If people want to find out more about you or COPE, where can they find the campaign?
Yeah, it's votecope2018.ca. Or look us up on Facebook and all the social media channels. We've even got the COPE Instagram going. That's one of the things we've infused COPE with, is a little more presence on social media. Look COPE up there. You can find us at our campaign office at right by the Lido on East Broadway between Main and Fraser. And literally drop in anytime. Campaign staff and volunteers are there till 2 in the morning. You might find them like building a piñata, because we do things like smash piñatas at our press conference. So it's a really fun campaign. And I know everyone always says that, but honestly, in this campaign, if you have a creative idea, you can see it happen. And you can see Gene Swanson swinging a baseball bat at the piñata you make for this campaign, because we're really empowering people and encouraging artists and creative people to help us make politics exciting and engaging for people in Vancouver, young people who need to be hooked into it. And just people who need to make sense of the noise of these 158 candidates. COPE are the ones smashing piñatas. Let's leave it at that.
All right. Thank you so much, Derek.
Okay. Thanks, Ian.